We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Thank you, Victor. What's my vector, Victor? Roger, over. The great Victor Lyle out of Chicago, who's our voice guy. Hey, good evening, everybody. This is Bobby Mack.
This is Tara Servatius.
And Lee Rogers is back in the news center, I trust. There
yes,
he is.
Yes, back here.
Yep, we're all here. We are prepped. We are ready to bring you the results. All we're waiting for now
is results.
Yes, the results. We figured that, you know, we'd give him an hour. Lee, why don't you begin this evening by kind of going through the logistics of what happens after you vote?
Yeah. After you vote, the tabulations are done. Those machines that we all vote on, the electronic machines, all that is registered at the individual precinct. So, and there, I'm not sure how many precincts there are in Greenville County. I think there are around 150, 180, maybe more. So various counties have various amounts of precincts depending on the population density. And so each of those precincts counts those votes that have been tallied there. And then once that's done, all those machines and those tallies are taken to the central office in the county seat in Greenville or Anderson, Spartanburg, wherever.
Right.
And then that's where the actual tabulation is done. These things are never connected to the Internet.
Well, because I was going to say, is that where the Russians interfere?
Yeah. The Russians may have been in the parking lot over on University Ridge.
Actually, I think they let this one go because Hillary was not on the ballot.
But at any rate, that's what is going on now. So, and that's what they're trying to tabulate. We've got some information. There were a few problems, and there's always some problems somewhere. Somebody will get the wrong ballot out. Yeah. There's the human factor because you have these poll managers and poll workers that they do this one time, you know, every 2 or 4 years.
Right. And I did receive a number of text messages through the course of the afternoon, one about a power outage. None of these provided any specifics about where the problems were occurring.
Well, I got some details on that. Apparently, there was an accident right in front of the Ennery First Baptist Church, where one of the polling locations, you know, we have that separation of church and state there.
Exactly.
And anyway, that caused a power outage, and so they had to do battery-operated, you know, got some battery backup for that. So that's that was taken care of. Apparently, some wrong ballots were given out at Woodmont Middle School, and maybe there were some malfunctioning machines. Taylor's Elementary in Tigerville and Haywood Forest, those precincts, apparently were having some problems today. Got a call in to Conway Belanger with the Greenville County Elections office. And, of course, he's kind of busy right now, so I haven't got a confirmation from that. But those are the reports that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, if you've ever been down at County Square on election night, you want to talk about people running around like chickens with their heads cut off. That's exactly it, because it's pretty frantic. Because, as Lee mentioned, they are in the process of compiling all of this data. And it is actually because, as Lee mentioned, there is no internet connection to the voting machines. There is a central recording device, and that has to be hand carried.
Right.
In the case of Greenville County, down to County Square, where the information is then downloaded and then back uploaded to us.
Each of the individual precincts, too.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the way that's handled. And I'll give you a little, also a tip. If you want to find out how your precinct voted, if you go to your precinct right now, if you look on the door or the window of that precinct, even though it's closed, once they have tabulated all the votes, that is posted right there.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, that's what a lot of the candidates and I think some of the networks do, is that they have runners who are actually there at the precincts, and they can get the individual tallies from that precinct. You can put them together, and then you've got, you know what the election results are before it's even reported.
Yeah. Interesting.
Now, but you'd have to have like 150 or a large number of folks, because some of these precincts are within like a mile or two of each other, so there's not that much distance, because it's particularly in the population dense areas in the metropolitan areas.
Well, even in Taylor's, there are three that polling places that are located within about mile and a half of each other.
Right. Even in Anderson County, where I am, there's like three within about 2 miles.
Well, that's interesting, knowing that next time, you know, we can deploy our ground forces.
Yeah.
You know, we can put them out there, give them all a cell phone.
Yeah.
And just call us with the results, and we can totally bypass the election headquarters downtown.
Absolutely. There you go.
What they mean is we'll send Seth.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Anybody want to do it? Nah.
Hopefully,
send Seth.
Hopefully he's got that warp drive unit working because he'll have a lot of ground to cover.
Exactly. Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch what happens tonight. Tara had Catherine Templeton on this morning. She will recap that for us momentarily. And then John Warren was in the studio with me for a last gasp visit in the 5 o'clock hour this afternoon. So let's flash back in time, Tara, because a number of callers referenced your interview with Catherine Templeton this morning, and John Warren sort of touched on the periphery of it as well.
Absolutely. Before I talk about her, though, can I talk about this woman? I got to talk about this woman.
Which
she
woman is that?
She was at my precinct when I went to vote, and I was so touched by her.
Did she recognize who you were?
Oh, no.
She didn't. Had no clue.
She was at my precinct, and this car pulls up, like, up onto the sidewalk almost, right?
Yeah, that's a good start.
No, this is not a woman driver story. she pulls up, the man pulls up almost onto the sidewalk. I'm like, what the heck is he doing? You know what I mean? And then I figure it out. He's letting his wife out. And she doesn't want to do the curbside voting. Because I'm hearing him talking, because she doesn't think it might not count if she does the curbside voting. You know, right. I can't count later, whatever. I don't know. She thinks it might not count. So she gets out of the car, and I'm not paying much attention to her, and so she's voting about the same time as I. This woman, y'all, she was very elderly, could barely walk.
Wow.
And I was behind her, and there was another woman behind her. We both kind of had our arms out like this, because like we didn't know she's going to make it all the way down the sidewalk, which now we know, oh, that's why her husband pulled like literally onto the sidewalk. He was going to get her as close to the poles as he could.
So you guys were the fail-safe device.
We were. We both kind of had our hands out like, is she going to go down? Because she had a walker, but she really needed something more. And she was so determined to vote.
God love her.
I know. And then she tottered right back down, and her husband hops out of the car, runs around, gets her underneath the armpits to help her, you know, fully help her, you know, in back down into his Honda. So it was kind of lower than her. Help her back down into the car. And it took her forever to walk from the front door of that precinct to that car.
Well, it's nice that you
And I loved watching that.
Yeah, and you were standing
there. I
loved
it.
You know, ready to help should she need it. I have to admit, I felt really embarrassed. Last week, I go to Costco to get some gas, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm in line, and there's a woman in front of me, and she had, what did she have? Had a small SUV.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just sitting there in the car, right? And I'm saying, well, okay, all right, you know, patience is a virtue. You know, I'll just wait for it. And so here she comes. She gets out of the car. Well, God love her. She'd pulled in, you know, cars have either your gas cap either on the left-hand side or the right-hand
right.
side. Now, if you look at your gas gauge in your car, it's got that little flag that shows you left or right, okay? But that's, sadly, it's way beyond it. And she was elderly also. Now, I can say that because I'm almost 72 years old, right? So I'm in that zip code. So she gets out, and then she realizes that she's on the wrong side. So, you know, when you're on the wrong side, it has enough hose that you can pull it over the top of the vehicle. But God love her, you know, she has the arm strength, you know, of like it's tough to get a Kleenex out of the box, let alone to get the gas hose all the way over the roof of the car. And so I'm watching. Now, in retrospect, I'm thinking to myself, Bob, what are you doing sitting there behind her? Why don't you get out and help her, you lazy bum? And so the guy from Costco finally comes over, and there's a younger woman who's in the lane in front of her. She gets out of her car because now she's got the gas in there, but she can't get the nozzle back out of the gas, so out of the tank. So this woman comes, the younger woman comes back, and she helps her, and they eventually get it done. And I felt so bad because, you know, I'm there as an observer, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like a UN white hat, white helmet.
That's how I felt today.
And I'm thinking, you stupid jerk, why don't you get out of the car and help this poor little old lady?
Absolutely. I was just so touched by her determination to vote.
Yeah. You got to love
it. She was not in good health at all, you could tell, but man, she was going to cast that vote.
And
she wanted to, and she was there, and I loved that. Absolutely loved that.
For the record, though, the curbside voting does work. They have special computers for that.
So, yeah, she didn't. Yeah. That's what they said to her, ma'am. You know, you can, because she was obviously struggling to walk in. I mean, it took forever for her to even get in there, and she was not steady on her feet while she was voting. But she was not convinced it was going to count.
I understand. I got you.
So, I mean, I get it. I know what that feels like. You know, I hate voting absentee because I'm always paranoid they shoved it somewhere. You know what I mean?
And compare this lady you're talking about with this text message that I got during the show today. Bobby Mack, I'm sure a lot of people aren't undecided. I'd mentioned how the undecided numbers had come down substantially in the closing days, which is typical. But we had a lot of undecideds, especially in the 4th District congressional race. Mm-hmm. That was like 30% a couple of weeks ago were undecided. Bobby Mack, I'm sure a lot of people aren't undecided, just lazy. Most of my coworkers know I keep up with current events. So today, everybody came up and asked, hey, who's the best candidate to vote for conservative values? Lazy, says the text message.
I hope he handed them my unendorsement list.
Yeah.
It's a guide.
Probably did.
It's able to infiltrate the workplace. But no, you asked me about the Catherine Templeton interview today.
Yes.
The most interesting part to me was that she was encouraging everyone to vote for Kevin Bryant.
Really?
Yeah, she was. Because
so it's a psyop.
This is it was absolutely psyop.
Yeah.
Russians may be involved. We don't know.
Could be.
Yet. We don't know that. But yeah.
So she's thinking every vote for Kevin Bryant is one less for John Warren,
exactly.
Who is their real competition.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, John Warren was on right before her saying, please don't vote for Kevin Bryan because all you're doing is voting for Catherine Templeton.
Yeah.
And so you can see how their internal polling must be breaking down.
There are so many machinations going on here because of the fact that both Templeton and Warren, and to a lesser degree, Kevin Bryant, are all fighting tooth and nail for second place.
Oh, it was great. Catherine Templeton's like, you know, Kevin Bryant is a great guy. Like, I wish I could vote for him if I were in this race, but you can vote for it.
Yeah, right.
It's
funny because when John Warren was on today, and a number of callers and texters pointed out that Catherine Templeton had played the don't beat up on a girl card.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people felt like,
on
you know,
show, yeah.
Playing the gender card and, you know, don't attack the girl. And they were saying, look, you know, if you're going to be governor, you got to be a little tougher than that. Saying, you know, what are you going to do when Hugh Weatherman comes after you? You're going to say, don't attack the girl. And I made the counter observation. I said, look, let's reverse the roles here. Can you imagine Tara saying, don't attack the girl? Not going to happen.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
I didn't say anything because I just wanted that to be their day this morning. We have asked them
tough
questions, and I feel like they've answered them all. They've earned their time, so I let them make their pitch. So I just kept my mouth shut.
Yep.
No matter what the people on the text line said.
You are listening to our 2018 election coverage, and we're still waiting for results to come in. Let me quickly run down the very initial reports in the GOP race for governor with 1% reporting. There are 1,600 precincts in South Carolina. 16 of them have been counted. Henry McMaster, 41%. John Warren, 29%. Catherine Templeton, 20%. Kevin Bryant, 6%. And Yancey McGill, 3%. And by the way, we have no idea which 16 precincts are reporting. And on the Democrat side, James Smith at 61%, Marguerite Willis at 27%, and Phil Noble at 12%. And as I said, this is as early as it gets.
Oh, yeah. When you're that early, you don't know what part of the state you're looking at. You don't know any of that kind of stuff. I will say this, though. It's going to be interestingly and Bob to see if you look at it with Henry McMaster and you put together Catherine Templeton's total with John Warren's total, more people are against McMaster than for him. And so don't be surprised if Catherine or, John Warren gets into the runoff and beats Henry McMaster. That outcome would not surprise me at all.
And historically, Lee, isn't that the way it works? And the rationale behind it being that if there are numerous other candidates, as there are four or five other candidates in the field there, that obviously if you were going to vote for Henry McMaster, you would have done it in the first time around in the primary. And so then the other challengers voters coalesce behind whoever is remaining. And so they have a distinct advantage going into the runoff.
Yep. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
It is. And we will be here all evening long until the results are totally tabulated. And we know exactly how everything has turned out. 8:19 coming up on 8:20 here on the 2018 Election Night Coverage Show on WORD. Be right back. Welcome back, 8:23 here on WORD. We are with you, avidly awaiting the results of this evening's races. There are numerous races that are going to be watched very, very closely. Some of the ones that are considered sort of down-ticket races are some of those for House representation here in the upstate. And with the crowded field to replace Trey Gowdy in the 4th Congressional District, That has taken some, like Dan Hamilton, who's been a state senator, and there's state representatives as well that have gotten into that race. And so now that has opened up seats, like in House District 20, where Bobby Davis is running against Adam Morgan. It's also going to be interesting to watch what happens in House District 21, where Bobby Cox is challenging Phyllis. Yes, I voted for the gas tax, Henderson.
And no, I will never go on 106.3 WORD, never.
As long as I live.
As long as I live, Henderson.
So there are numerous races, and of course, the two that probably are attracting the most attention are the gubernatorial race. Because here in the upstate of South Carolina, and I mentioned this to John Warren today when he was in with me in the 5 o'clock hour, there are some, what is that, Lee, about 500,000 Republican votes here in the upstate of South Carolina.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, there's a bunch. Just in Greenville and Spartanburg County, not including, you know, Pickens County and Oconee and every place else, so Anderson County as well. The thinking has been for some time, it is very difficult, if not virtually impossible, to be elected to a statewide office unless you carry the upstate.
Yes.
Is that fair to say, Lee?
Yes, certainly. Yeah.
So that, to one extent, explains the heavy input that we got from the campaigns of Catherine Templeton and John Warren wanting to get exposure.
I was consistently amazed that as many tough questions as I threw out the both of them, they would contact me and ask to come back on.
Right.
I've not seen that, and that's really good. I really respect both of them.
Yeah,
for
me
doing
too.
That.
Me too. Because usually when they take a few body blows, you know, they well, case in point, Henry McTaxta.
Or McMissing.
Henry McMissing.
I was thinking about this over the weekend. I think it hurt him badly that he did not come on the air with us.
I think
that if he comes out at 48%, 47%, I think that did it to him.
Now,
I think he didn't make it over. I mean, it really, people lost respect for him.
This may be extreme narcissism, but did you notice in the last couple of weeks of the campaign, Henry McMaster's voice was never heard in any of the radio commercials? We heard Donald Trump. We heard professional voiceover announcers.
Yeah.
But we never heard from Henry McTaxta in the last 2 weeks.
I'll say so.
Never heard from the governor during the last couple of weeks of the campaign.
I wonder, was
his marketing ad campaign influenced by the fact that I imitated him so much?
Well, I did get a call from him yesterday.
Oh, so you did?
I'm sure a lot of folks did.
Yeah, but you're in the news department.
No, I'm talking about my home phone.
Oh,
which my wife has got me going through and deleting every single one of these messages that comes through every day. It's like, get all these things off of here.
Right. Yeah. My baby doll, Brenda, kept count at one point yesterday, had, I think it was 12 in 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, notice how the politicians, you know, let's take care of ourselves first, boys. When they passed all those laws against robocalls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, guess who got excluded from that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask my husband if we got any. We have a landline, but he didn't say anything about it. I don't know if we got any or not.
He probably just deleted them.
Yeah.
You know, being a Marine, you know, and take care of that. There we go. Yeah.
Although I have to say, the best reason I can think of to vote for Henry McMaster in a runoff would be so that Bobby Mack can continue doing his voice like for all time, because it's so I just die listening to you do it on the radio.
But what a price to pay. Yeah, he's almost as much fun to do as Bill Clinton. Yeah, you see what William Jefferson Clinton said? Well, you know, the circumstances have changed a lot now over what you could get away with. Essentially, that's what he said in an interview with NPR.
Yeah.
Bill, didn't anybody ever say to you, when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging?
Right, and then right on cue, Juanita Broderick flips out, right?
Yeah, right.
Understandably.
Right.
Being the rape survivor that she is.
Yes.
Flips out. Well, you can't get away with as much doing as much against these ladies' will anymore, boy. I miss those days. Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, right. Yeah, essentially that's what he said. Yeah, boy, those were the good old days. You can go around, you can sexually harass anybody you want. Yeah, I used to do it all the time. I sexually harass women. Hillary'd always stick up for me.
Yeah, I saw that and it dropped my jaw. I didn't even get to it today because there's so much stuff going on, though. And it was just so frustrating. You can't do radio anymore because these elections are in the way.
And for those who are wondering.
Elections.
Yes. I know.
Yeah, stupid elections. Where'd they come from? I hammered this point. I belabored it to death. But I'm sure that by now you folks understand that according to FCC regulations, the federal government, we cannot turn down any political advertising. In fact, it's so extreme that Tara, in the closing days of the campaign, without her knowledge, was featured in a radio commercial. Well, I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, well, that was Dan Hamilton, which actually kind of makes me laugh. I'll tell you that now. He took my voice from an interview that I did with him. And I've been, a little exercised over this Club for Growth ad, if you haven't seen that. So, because I thought it was very disingenuous to go after Hamilton and Timmons for not being pro-Trump enough when the guy the Club for Growth is endorsing, Josh Kimbrell, is the, biggest never-Trumper at all of all. So, I was not happy with them. So he used my voice in his ad, and that created the impression. When I came here Monday morning, I got all these texts. You endorsed Dan Hamilton?
Yeah, you think Dan Hamilton's pretty?
Yeah, well, no. In fact, our legal department sent him a cease and desist.
Right.
But
it didn't do any good.
It didn't do any good because by law, guess what? The politicians have exempted themselves and no one else from copyright laws.
Right.
So, guys, if I can interject for just a moment, we do have an AP calling a winner in the Secretary of State race. Mark Hammond is going to be the winner.
Darn.
The incumbent. He's only been in there, 14 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, not a bad guy or anything, but I thought I was pulling for Putnam because I thought he would do a good job.
Well, hopefully he's found that great seal of the state of South Carolina so we can get that stuff taken care of.
Yeah, have you all talked about that story? That's a great story.
Yeah, that was really the only story of the entire election as far as Secretary of State because, quite honestly, Hammond really he's done a good job. I mean, he's scandal-free. There's not any really big thing other than the fact that Joshua Putnam discovered that the great seal of the state of South Carolina had not been affixed to pieces of legislation for years.
The last 12, in fact.
Which technically means that those laws passed are not actually law. Now, it may be difficult to get a court to go along with that, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah. And once that seal is affixed, once it's signed by the governor and becomes law and the state seal is affixed, then it goes to the archives where it disappears forever. Nobody ever bothers to look at it again, as the law is supposed to be added to the official code of laws for the state. But before it goes to the archives, the Secretary of State is supposed to affix the seal of the state of South Carolina showing it was duly passed and signed. And up until this summer, for his entire tenure, Mark Hammond has not affixed any seals to any laws. Wait a minute. That means a gas tax is unconstitutional.
Maybe there's hope for us.
I'm always looking for a loophole here. You know what I'm saying? So, was it a dereliction of duty? Yeah. I mean, did nobody ever say to him, hey, Mark, by the way, did you affix the state seal to these? Because otherwise they're not officially laws.
Where's that ink pad?
Yeah. Anybody know a notary? Oh, boy. 831, this is WORD and our election night coverage. And let me take a quick peek here and see in
primary
the
night. Governor's up to the minute coverage from.
Yep, sorry. Yep, inadvertent computer error. Still 1%. Let me reload this right quick. And see if we have any further results in the statewide races. Here we go. We now have a little bit more. 369 of 2,300 precincts reporting. Henry McMaster, 45%. John Warren, 26%. Catherine Templeton, 21%. Kevin Bryan, 6%. And Yancey McGill, the former Democrat, at 2%. So, there is that.
I can tell you which counties have been reporting. We have partial reporting coming out of Anderson County, Lawrence County, and Greenwood County.
Interesting.
Also, let's see, we also have, Lexington, I believe, and Berkeley, and Dorchester, and Charleston counties. Excuse me, that was Sumter, not Lexington County, and Lawrence and Greenwood County, as well as Anderson County and Oconee County. And the interesting thing is we have an extremely high turnout in Oconee County. Right now, it looks like voter turnout is over almost 23% in Oconee County.
Wow.
These other counties.
That's huge for a primary.
Anderson County, 2.38%, Lawrence, 2.31%, 8.95% for Greenwood County.
Interesting, because The conventional wisdom is that John Warren's strength is going to be in the upstate.
Yes.
Because he's from here. Is it therefore also assume that Catherine Templeton's is going to be in the low country because that's where she's
from? Low country in Midlands, yes.
Yeah, in the Midlands.
Yeah, and I'm going to be kind of surprised if he significantly beats her because I really would have thought the upstate would have split more. But Bryan is pretty far behind, and she is a quintessential Charlestonian. I mean, you know, she's where the part of Charleston in which she lives is just very much old Charleston.
Yeah,
and it's just
very Tony.
Very Tony, shall we say?
Right.
She's their kind of girl.
And Bob and I were talking, I was thinking this is the sort of the way that if the demographics of it, if it's the older voters that predominate, then I would agree with Tara's assessment here that we would probably see a Catherine Templeton McMaster runoff. And if it's a little bit more heavily skewed towards some of the younger voters, particularly here in the upstate, then it would be a McMaster Warren runoff that we'd be looking at.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to follow, especially as we get the various regions coming in.
Here's going to be another interesting one. Mark Sanford has a challenger who was endorsed just this afternoon by Trump.
And what an endorsement.
Yes, Lee, you sent it to me. Do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
Oh, you go ahead.
Oh, it's so good. Yes. I just roared when I saw your email.
It's typical Trump.
It is. Mark Sanford has been very unhelpful to me in my campaign to MAGA. He is MIA and nothing but trouble. He is better off in Argentina.
Ow.
I fully endorse Katie Arrington for Congress in South Carolina, a state I love. She is tough on crime and will continue our fight to lower taxes. Vote Katie. Now, unfortunately, he sent this out about 4:15 this afternoon, so a little late to
Did
help
Did you see
her.
The P.S. that came with that?
No, there was
Kim
a P.S.
Kim Jong-un says, hey.
No. Yeah, Justin Trudeau
just
says,
that
hi.
That was a joke.
Right. Well,
Trump, you don't know. I mean, did he tweet that? I don't know.
Oh, no, he did. Okay. No. But our investigative reporters from the Bobby Mack Show were on the scene, even as Mark Sanford, the former governor, who, of course, famously hiked the Appalachian Trail.
Tail.
Even as the tweet from President Trump arrived in his inbox, And Mark Sanford was quoted as saying,
"What?
what was that, Congressman?
What?
Oh, okay, all right. So that's the latest. If you're wondering, by the way, about that race involving the former governor, who is now congressman from the 1st District of South Carolina, they're tied. Virtual tie." Mark Sanford has 1,903 votes. Katie Arrington, the Trump-supported challenger, 1,902, both of them at 48%. So that's kind of interesting.
Actually, an update I've got here shows Arrington pulling ahead just a bit at 49.7% to 47.18%.
See, so if you make the assumption that the last second endorsement from President Trump gave her a little shot in the arm at the end, a little boost— Then, conversely, shouldn't we see that for Henry McMaster?
And we can also thank Dmitry Cherny for being the third candidate in that race. At 3% could be a deciding factor.
Could be. Yeah, could be. I mean, you know, it's like you're watching Jeopardy and the contestant that has $500 as they go to Final Jeopardy is the only one to get the answer right and ends up winning. Yeah. And here's yesterday's winner is one who's a one-day winning total, $510. Wow, way to go. If you're wondering about the 4th district race, we don't have any results in there
yet. That could take a while. And, you know, because you've got 12 Republicans and 5 Democrats.
Holy cow.
So, and we have got, you know, quite a list there. And Greenville County so far is not reporting even any partial results yet.
Right.
I've had a, let's see if I can get it. We mentioned this earlier. We've got partial results from Oconee County, Anderson County, Lawrence County, Greenwood County, Sumter, Berkeley, Dorchester, and Charleston County.
And there's no rhyme or reason as to how these come in. We can get, as we see represented here, some from the low country and some from the upstate.
And once again, these are just partial results from these counties. So far, the results we're seeing, there's only been 36,496 votes that have been counted. Now, that's not how many has been cast. That's how many have been counted so far.
And for those of you that are real political folks that really follow politics closely, another race is going to be interesting. is the Democrat primary in House District Number 5. That's where Archie Parnell ran into a bunch of difficulty in the closing days of the campaign. In fact, the Democrat Party actually asked him to drop out of the race when it was revealed that decades ago he had beaten his wife. And he said, no, I'm going to stick it out. With 29% reporting in that SC District 5 Democrat primary, Archie Parnell has 62%.
Yeah.
So apparently these revelations didn't hurt him.
Read into that as you will.
Yeah. He was taking campaign advice, I guess, from Bill Clinton on that one.
Well, at a certain level, though. At a certain level.
Yeah. How far back can you go?
Exactly. And don't get me wrong. Not for a second am I condoning anything that was done here. But he did admit to it. He paid the price for it. And this was decades ago. And if you have someone who has repented of that sin and has not committed that sin again,
right?
You know, is there forgiveness from the voters? And it looks like in the district race he's in, there is.
Yeah, sure looks that way. It is 8:39. You're listening to 2018 Election Night coverage here on WORD. Be right back. Hi, welcome back. It is our 2018 primary Election Night coverage with yours truly, Bobby Mack.
And me, Tara Servatius.
And Lee Rogers, who at the moment is out of the news booth and is no doubt busy tracking down numbers. In on the text line this evening, and by the way, you can feel free to communicate that way with us. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number is 71307. Hey, guys, I unplugged my landline yesterday. Good thinking. But the messages still showed up on my TV runner. I don't know how many I got, but the text messages on my cell is what really gets me irritated. I gotcha. Bobby, I don't know how Atwater got my cell number, but I've got text messages from his campaign. What the? Gotcha. And I guess this is in reference to our discussion about Henry McMaster and my making fun of his speech pattern. Texter said he got tired of the chicken hawk from Word making fun of him. So I texted back to him, moi?
He's probably talking about that other chicken hawk.
You know, people, you know, could be, but people don't know the backstory on how this conflagration burst out, and it wasn't us that struck the match.
No, we didn't. We didn't. I mean, and I was kind of making me sort of sad over the weekend in a weird way because Henry could have come on here and, you know, I didn't even have any tough questions for him in the beginning because he hadn't done anything yet. And we just,
Which is a
whole other issue. But, I mean, you know, when our manager said, hey, let's get Henry McMaster on, so we tried. Hey, he's the new guy. He just, you know, is moving into the governor's mansion. Let's do one of these cheesy hiya interviews. That's all we wanted. We weren't looking to grill him.
You know, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I mean,
looking good. How's the family?
Sure, it wasn't even a campaign then.
Right.
And they ran us around for 5 months, and then I finally had the just absolutely ridiculous conversation. Will he come on in June? No, July? No, August? No.
Nope. Busy. Booked up. Look at the time. Got to go.
Like if I come in at 11 p.m. one night and record it, can you come on? No.
3 in the morning when you come in? No. I can't do it then.
You know, okay, I guess he's dissing me personally. Fine. But, I mean, I just always, what makes me angry is he's dissing you, the listener.
Right.
Like, you just don't care and you don't matter and people like you don't matter. And that is the general attitude out of Columbia. And when you see it, that, you know, that's what it feels like sometimes. And when you see it illustrated so clearly for you like that, you're like, wow.
You know, the thing that really is irritating me, and we'll give you a little backstory on this. When Henry was running for lieutenant governor, he was all over my show like White on Rice. His people would call up and say, hey, you know, can we get on the show? Sure, okay, fine, you know, we'll put you on. And then all of a sudden, you know, he becomes governor. And for whatever reason, I become persona non grata. Now, the RNC brought in this gal to handle his media relations, and she doesn't know anything about what's going on down here. She doesn't know that I've known Henry McMaster for 15 years, and he's been on the program consistently. But they just all of a sudden, you know, issued this mandate. Nope, we're not going to do any interviews on WORD. Then they came back and they said, well, if you would consent to do an interview with his running mate, his lieutenant governor running mate, I can't even remember her name. Nobody knows her. Well, a lot of people know her, but nobody knows her politically. Then we might consent to having the governor on if you submit questions in advance. We don't do that.
No, never.
You know, this is not CNN and Donna Brazile slipping questions in advance to Hillary. You know, we don't do that. We don't tell you what questions we're going to ask. So anyway, it snowballed downhill from there. The relationship deteriorated to the point where I said, okay, fine, you know, if you're going to refuse to be on here, then I'll just, you know, make fun of you.
I think in the beginning he...
Is it childish? Is it sophomoric? Yeah, but that's what we do.
Yeah, but I have a real disdain for politicians who will not get down, you know, in the mud, in the hay with regular people.
Right.
Because if you won't do that, then I don't want you representing me, because you have your perspective has been completely rearranged. You're supposed to represent the people.
And I don't really blame Henry for it. And as I've said, I like Henry personally. I think he's a nice man. You know, kind of ineffectual, hasn't done much. Sort of a pawn of Hugh Leatherman, truth be told. You know, Leatherman runs this state. Come on.
I know, that's why Henry endorsed him in 2016. Right. But, you know, I was willing to, like, hear him out and hear his side of it.
Sure.
And I think he initially didn't come on because he didn't want to take a position on the gas tax.
Well,
remember,
he's the governor.
For a long time.
We're not going to be rude to him, for heaven's sake.
No.
I would give him a chance to defend
his
position.
Absolutely. Like I said, I didn't even have any hard questions for him the first interview. It would have been
a
snoozer.
Unless we agreed to softball the guy, then we weren't going to get him. And even then, there was no guarantee we were going to. So look, you know, if you're telling me I'm not going to get the governor, okay, fine, I'm going to take you at your word. And if I'm not going to get the governor, if he doesn't have enough respect for the voters of the upstate of South Carolina to come on my show, he didn't have to come on mine. He could come on Terrace, come on with Vince. I don't care. You know, but give the voters an opportunity to hear, you know, why you did what you did on, as you mentioned, the gas tax.
Maybe there was an explanation there. I don't know. We never got an answer from the guy.
Yeah.
Well, we have got an answer on the Democrat that will be facing Jeff Duncan in the 3rd Congressional District in November. Mary Guerin has won the Democrat nomination for the 3rd Congressional District. And
run before?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
She's a college instructor, apparently, from Anderson University. So she'll be running against Jeff Duncan, as well as an American Party candidate, Dave Moore. Those the other parties, other than the Democrat and Republican parties in South Carolina, nominate their nominees by convention, so that's already determined.
So her campaign will consist of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Right. Yes.
Right. Again.
Yeah. It's coming up on 10 minutes before 9. This is our 2018 primary election night coverage. We expect results to begin. Once the results do come in, usually it's a flood. So stand by. We'll bring it to you as quickly as we get it. Good evening and welcome back. It is the 2018 primaries for both the Democrats and the Republicans. We are getting some results initially in on some of the upstate county races. Let me quickly run down a few of those for you. Abbeville County, County Council District 1 on the Republican side, there is no vote tally there yet. However, for a probate judge in Anderson County on the GOP side, the incumbent Martha Newton has a 10% lead at this point, 55% to 45% over Dan Sharp. Anderson County Council, District 4 on the Republican side, there is no incumbent there. Brett Sanders is leading with 71%, Glenn Budden Jr. at 20%, and Frank Presley at 9%. Anderson County Council, District 6 on the GOP side, Ken Waters, the incumbent, has a 10 percentage point lead over Jimmy Davis. That is with 11% of the precincts reporting. In Cherokee County, the sheriff, the GOP, Reese, only 3% of the precincts reporting. Steve Muller, who is the incumbent, is leading by 9%. Greenville County Council, with 5% of the 20 precincts reporting. That's only one precinct reporting. Dan Tripp leads with 78% over Sylvia Lockaby. Lawrence County Council, District 1, Kemp Younce is in the lead with 55% of the vote. Susan Thaxton is second with 26%, then Adam Howell and Ryan Thorne at 10% each. Lawrence County Council, District 5, that is led by Jeffrey Carroll with 45% of the vote. Keith Tollison, the incumbent, 35%, and Dale Mitchell, 20%. Oconee County Council, District 1, that is an incumbent who is running unopposed. That's Edda Kamik. who is going to have all the votes in that race because she's running on a post. Pickens County Council District 1 on the Republican side, Inslee Feimster, Margaret Thompson, but no results, no votes tabulated there yet. Spartanburg County Council Chair, there is just 1% of the precincts. That's one of 100. And Manning Lynch has 74% of the vote. Brian Turnage at 26%. Spartanburg County Council District 2, 7% of the precincts are reporting there. Jack Mabry is in the lead with 67% of the vote. William Crawford at 33%. And that's the latest that we have so far on some of these South Carolina county races.
Yeah, I'm looking also right now at Governor, 29% of precincts showing that they are in. And right now, Henry McMaster, 44%, John Warren, 27%, and Catherine Templeton, 20%. It's 30% of precincts now, actually. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. In the Attorney General's race, 29% of the precincts reporting there. The incumbent, Alan Wilson, has a comfortable lead, 48% to 29% over his nearest challenger, who is Todd Atwater. The Secretary of State race, at this point, 29% of the precincts reporting there.
And that one's already been called for Hammond.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry about that. Yeah, with 66% of the vote. Yep, skipped over that because of the shading. So the big races that we are concerned with are going to be, of course, the gubernatorial race on the GOP side, as well as the 4th District congressional race.
And on the Democrat side for governor, James Smith has been declared the victor there.
Gotcha. So there is the Dems' designated victim for November.
Interesting thing going on right now, and it's very early in the Republican primary, District 4. For Congress, it's showing 0% of precincts reporting. Okay, so this must be early voting. William Timmons in first place with 873 votes. Again, it's very early. Dan Hamilton, second place with 804 votes. And Lee Bright, right behind Dan Hamilton with 749.
Yeah, I'm not exactly where they're getting that. It says 0 of 231 precincts reporting.
Yeah.
And this is makes it a little complicated is that this district is parts of Greenville and Spartanburg County. So you've got two separate county election commissions that are dealing with this, which makes it a little bit difficult. But then again, it's not like the 3rd Congressional District where you've got like parts of 11 counties that are
right, exactly.
In there. So.
Yeah. So I don't know what those numbers are, and they're low, so yeah. We'll keep our eye on
and,
it.
And most of the sources that I'm seeing, we're still saying 0% for Greenville County. For some reason, we're not getting any results yet back from Greenville County. Once again, I've got to call in to the Director of Elections in Greenville County and not getting any message back yet. But, they're kind of busy down there right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they are. There were a number of ballot initiatives or ballot questions.
Yes, those were interesting.
This time around. On the Republican side, there were two, and on the Democrat side were two. A caller today inquired, said, why are the questions different on the GOP ballot and on the Democrat ballot?
Well, the reason for that is because the parties themselves put those questions there. These have absolutely zero legal weight.
Right.
This is simply an opinion poll that they take the opportunity during these primaries to ask this. And so, and since the parties are the ones that are doing these primaries, the Republicans had two questions they wanted to ask, and the Democrats had two questions that they wanted to ask.
And I thought it was interesting because question one, I viewed, and you guys tell me if you agree with this assessment or not, but I viewed it as tossing a bone to those who have been pushing to have a closed primary in South Carolina. It was a sop.
Well,
to that question.
Yes, the problem that we run into, and I know Tara's talked about this numerous times in the mornings.
Me too.
I know you have too. But obviously the situation with the open primaries in the state is one of the main problems we have with the moderates that keep getting elected when we claim to be such a conservative state.
But of course, if you're Lindsey Graham, it's not a problem.
No, it's not a problem at all.
And it's the legislature at this point that has to do it. The state has already tried to sue the federal government to allow this to take place. They lost that during the Obama administration and gave up on that effort. And now the only way to get it done, according to the rulings that we've seen, is through the legislature. And of course, the very people who don't want that are those in the legislature.
Right. And the backstory on that lawsuit is kind of interesting because Sam Harms, an attorney here in Greenville County. He used to be the head of the Greenville County GOP back in the day. He was the driving force behind bringing the lawsuit.
And Stephen Brown.
That's
right. He was an attorney involved in this, too.
He's running in District 4 right
now. Exactly.
Exactly.
And Samuel Harms is running as well.
Yes, that's right. So Sam and Stephen convinced the South Carolina GOP, and Chad Conley was the chairman at the time, convinced the South Carolina GOP to join them in the lawsuit. And the reason they did was because legally, one county could not establish the requirements, the parameters for the entire state for primary voting. Well, they get to a federal court, I believe it was in Baltimore, and just as the case is coming up, Chad Conley drops the South Carolina GOP as one of the litigants in the lawsuit, leaving the Greenville County GOP as a standalone. And the judge at that point said, no, look, you one county can't establish it for the entire state. The suit's thrown out. Within a matter of days after that, Chad Conley resigns as the head of the South Carolina GOP and takes a job with the RNC.
And by the way, the attorneys that were doing this, we're doing it pro bono.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're talking about...
Sam Harms actually spent a great deal of his own money out of pocket.
And Stephen Brown did as well.
Yes.
And you're talking about trying to fight an uphill battle, suing the federal government.
Right.
And the other... And because it was more than just those two attorneys. It was their staffs and other folks in their firms that were helping with that as well. A lot of hours went into that.
And it's a shame that it transpired that way.
Yes,
we need to take a break for station ID, and we'll be right back on the other side. Welcome back. This is our 2018 primary night election coverage here on WORD with your host. I'm Bob McLean, Bobby Mack, along with Tara Servatius, Lee Rogers, our news director back in the news center. If you're wondering about those ballot questions, and did you get a lot of questions about the ballot questions in the closing days as people finally got a look at them and said, what the heck is this?
I did. I did get a lot of those, a lot of those questions, people wanting to know, were they voting for something binding? So.
Right. Question one. On the Republican side, do you believe that voters should have the option to choose to affiliate with a political party when they register to vote or change their voter registration in South Carolina? I voted yes on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just, to send them a message. Yeah, we'd like to have a closed primary, all you rhinos in Columbia. Question two on the GOP ballot. Do you believe that South Carolina's tax code should be brought into conformity with the new Trump tax cuts in the federal tax code for maximum simplification and to lower the overall tax burden on South Carolina taxpayers and businesses? My immediate reaction to this, and you guys can tell me if you had the same reaction, my immediate reaction was, what the? You mean we haven't done this already?
Well, see, actually, and if I've got the timeline right, the state has already done this, but it has not been signed into law yet because the budget has still not been approved because they conveniently moved the vote on the governor's vetoes and other things
to the special session.
Right. And actually until after the runoff.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So no one can be held responsible.
Exactly.
Right. Yes. Hey, don't look at me.
How convenient.
And on the Democrat side, the questions were, and you can see the immediate differences here between the Dems and the GOP. Question one, do you support passing a state law allowing doctors to prescribe medical marijuana to patients? It's not just general, if you got it, smoke it.
Yeah.
It's medical
use. Medical
marijuana. Yeah. And question two, do you support passing a state law requiring the governor of South Carolina to accept all federal revenues offered to support Medicaid and Medicaid expansion efforts in the state? You know, it would have been interesting if the questions had inadvertently been flipped and the Democrats' questions got on the Republican ballot and vice versa.
That would be funny.
That would have been interesting to see.
And, of course, that second one is all about Obamacare because the Nikki Haley as governor refused to expand Medicaid and expand the state's exposure to, millions and not billions of dollars in medical expenses that we would have been responsible for. It's not as simple as that question sounds, but then again, that's on the Democrat ballot.
Right. And, of course, the questions are all written by a team of Philadelphia lawyers who try and write the questions.
They must work with our intercom guys.
Yes. In the way that will most completely obfuscate the issue and make you scratch your head in puzzlement and go, what the?
Well, that was like that. The Bobby Mack players that had your... Your referendum question about voting no to say yes to no to everyone else who says yes.
That, of course, is Proposition 30 on Amendment 42.
That's
in fact,
it.
Is this up, Patrick? I've played it a bunch of times, but if you've never heard it, it is our reaction to these kind of ballot initiatives written in such a manner as to totally confuse you as to what they actually mean. Here is our commercial for Proposition 30.
Have you heard the arguments against Proposition 30?
They say stop Proposition 30, which says, yes, I want to block Amendment 42. We disagree.
Failing to pass Proposition 30 this election year is the worst vote you could cast. They say vote yes and vote no to enacting Amendment 42. We say no to their yes vote to oppose not supporting this issue.
Other people say that not passing Amendment 42 is a big mistake, and we should all cast a big yes vote by marking our ballots no to not stop this important legislation by making sure this critical proposal is stopped.
Remember, say no, vote yes.
Paid for by Citizens Against Opposing Not Stopping Passage.
What?
So there is our commercial for Proposition 30.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.